Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick. We have the great pleasure of talking about the Ravens' defensive effort versus the Bengals. I'm kind of smirking at that as we go through this. On Sunday, joining me to do that is Brandon Croxton. Brandon, how you doing?
Well, we get to talk about a win, so I think that makes this a lot lighter conversation than if this was a loss.
Very, very true. It would be a serious dark cloud hanging over what happened Sunday if this had not been a win. Even though the Ravens would not be in too much worse a position, I think they'd still be a playoff team if they had gone 2-3 and lost this game by 3 points. Say the 53-yard field goal had been good. Mm-hmm. Ravens' chance to make the playoffs is still pretty good in this AFC, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think they still have a good chance at making the playoffs, but it always hurts to, you know, lose a game in the division to probably would have been your top rival for the division. So at best you can do is split, and now you're going to tiebreakers for that. And then you know you're still behind the Steelers, so that would have been rough too. But you know, honestly, this was probably, you know, just monumental turn of events for the entire AFC, because this puts Cincinnati in a real big hole to dig themselves out of, because not only are they 1-4, they're 0-3 at home and they're 0-3 in the AFC. So if things come down to tiebreakers for a couple other teams for the final wild card spot, then being at 0-3 is a big hole to start with.
Yeah, maybe we start with this as the topic here, because I still see a lot of people are unhappy among Ravens fans. And in particular, there's always a fire Harbaugh crowd. It's just background noise at this point. There's nobody with a really good reason to fire Harbaugh. And the reason I say that is because I'm looking around at the rest of this dysfunctional division, and it's unbelievably bad. It's bad in terms of the play on the field. It's bad in terms of the problems and how unfixable they are. It's bad in terms of some of the infighting in these places. And it's really bad in terms of the coaching pretty much across the division. The only team that's in okay shape, and I don't think they're as well coached as the Ravens are, is the Steelers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Steelers have the best defense in the division, and that might be the best unit in the division. If you consider everybody's offense and everybody's defense, you're probably looking at the Ravens offense and Pittsburgh defense as the two best. But Justin Fields is not impressive as a quarterback. He's been better than what he was in Chicago, but he's still at best a mid-tier quarterback. I was just watching a video of George Pickens kind of sulking and running half speed on a lot of routes during the game last night. So, you know, they have some issues, but the Ravens are in a great position. I mean, Pittsburgh's rough. I mean, Cleveland is just a dumpster fire. They have probably the worst quarterback in the league. They're stuck with him in that contract for the next 3 years anyway. And that's like the worst position to be in. You stink, and you're not going to have any cap room next year to improve your team. So, yeah.
you know, one thing about the Browns fans, they're very knowledgeable for starters. One, probably the most in the division, if I'm going to say. I think they're ahead of the Pittsburgh fans in a lot of ways. The Pittsburgh fans are fairly knowledgeable. They're way ahead of Bengals fans. Bengals fans are the low rung on the AFC North totem pole. And the generalizations are tough here because there are certainly some very bright Bengals fans that we have on the show to do a great job of talking about the team, but the Browns fan base is extremely knowledgeable. And if you go to their boards right now, you get a sense of the frustration, which their only defense for is humor. I mean, that because they will talk about this team, and every like post has to start with a punchline about the, you know, it's like, and then they explain the joke kind of underneath it. It's a really sad situation for them to be in, and they really don't deserve this in terms of what's happening. It's just a terrible decision by ownership. And they are fire everyone mode. I mean, basically they say total tear down, everyone's available, fire Barry, you know. But the truth of the matter is, the hardest thing to change and the thing that gives your organization the most stability of all is ownership. And, you know, when you're starting off with the chasm-like difference between Bisciotti and Haslam, for example, or Bisciotti and the Brown family, you know, you're at an enormous disadvantage because you're going to make mistakes.
Right, exactly. I mean, I was saying to a friend about the Browns that they need to fire everybody who did not jump on a table and immediately say, don't do this Deshaun Watson deal. Just don't do it. Anybody who was for it needs to go. Anybody who was indifferent about it needs to go. The only person that should save the job is the person that jumped up on the table and said, do not do this. Whoever that was, because even if Deshaun was still a good quarterback, that's still a terrible deal to make with the fully guaranteed. And all you're doing to create cap space is pushing more and more money into the future. You're adding void years on that deal, and you're just making yourself, you're just digging yourself into a deeper hole every year. And for what? Because even if he was a good quarterback, you're at best probably a playoff team, nothing more.
Yeah, I like the fact in a certain way that it should be a cautionary tale for the Baltimore Ravens and their fans. I don't think the fan base, particularly the fan base who's the cap is too complicated for them, or they don't want to be bothered with it, or they look at other teams and they see how they have nice things and why don't we have nice things kind of thing. But the fans who don't understand the cap will always want every shiny player that becomes available. Davante Adams is the most the current example, but there have been so many in the past. It's hilarious that nobody learns a lesson from continually touching this burning hot stove. that they would still want these things, these players. I mean, it's difficult to understand. But anyway, the Browns fans learned the lesson the hard way. The Ravens fans should learn the lesson by seeing it happen to their little brother, and not having it have it happen to themselves.
Yeah. I mean, if you just look at how have any of these trades worked out for the teams that traded for these wide receivers?
Sure.
It hasn't worked out for Adams and the Raiders. I mean, the situation with the Dolphins, that's a terrible situation with Tyreek Hill. I mean, they basically almost made the Ricky Williams deal again, and it sucked away their depth and their cap space with that deal. And I'm blanking on the other. I mean, Marquise Brown and going to the Cardinals, that didn't help them at all. And just deal after deal after deal. And, you know, it's one thing to trade for a player, but trading for a player, giving away premium assets and giving that player a top of the market deal is a huge, that puts you usually, you're usually not going to win that deal.
Right. I hope that the league has figured that out now, but on the other hand, since I don't think it'll be the Ravens that end up getting Davante Adams, I don't see that as a realistic possibility given their cap space and next year and all of the potential competitive factors that can exist that make other teams offer better in terms of draft capital. I think I'd be happy to see either the price drop and the Raiders feel like they have to stick with him, or somebody massively overpay yet again and get burned by it yet again. But it doesn't matter. Honestly, it will not teach people who are fans of the roller coaster parity method. Win championships on a roller coaster and deal with the down years. That's not my position as a season ticket holder. I can't accept it. I can't take a team that basically tells me you're going to live through 2 years of bad football to get 2 or 3 years even of great football, or of it's actually like 2% better chance to win the Super Bowl maybe if you have Devontae Adams. You really want to put it in terms. I'm not taking 2 down years for that. I'm not taking two years of my tickets being worthless, of questioning whether or not I want to go to the game, of having, you know, people not really wanting to go to the game with me. It just entirely sucks to have a franchise that's willing to mortgage its future. And I'm so glad the Ravens are not that.
Yeah. And I mean, and think about it. Like, I think the challenge for EDC is you have Lamar Jackson, Tyler Linderbaum, Kyle Hamilton, Roquan Smith, Matabike are all under contract for the next 3 years. And all of them are 27 or younger. And you have them all under contract for the next years. You want to keep that for as long as you can, add pieces here and there, but make sure that you are able to keep that core together as long as possible. Like, the window is wide open for these next 3 years. Just add pieces and don't overpay. Because a lot of these players are going to get big contracts or already are on big contracts. You have to re-sign Kyle probably at the end of the year. You may have to re-sign Linderbaum at the end of the year. You still have to look at left tackle, whether that potentially is re-signing Ronnie Stanley or figuring something out. Otherwise, you're going to need money for that. So that is the challenge for the next 3 years. You have an excellent core of blue chip players. Build around that.
Yeah, and the building around that, I think, is going to be very minimal. It's going to be largely done out of the bargain bin. I know nobody likes to hear that, but I think that's largely where it's coming from, because their internal guys are so great. And you mentioned some guys, but Linderbaum, they have to sign this year because they can't afford the fifth-year option on a center getting left tackle money. So they really need to re-sign him. They've got a year, actually, they can wait on Kyle Hamilton. But then they've got divisible benefit years on a number of players. Isaiah Likely, you may want to, I think it's going to be a cut Andrews year, frankly, this offseason. I think they're going to cut Marcus Williams. You know, they're going to be out from under a couple contracts like McCary and Ricard, where they're going to have to find replacements who are viable. And then Travis Jones needs to be signed. I mean, he's at the end of his third year. He's incredibly important part of keeping Matabike productive, which we'll get to a little bit later in this episode. But I think the Ravens basically have the players that they're going to play with. And I don't think that there's any huge skill position player or huge addition that they need to make to this roster to really make it outstandingly better. They'll add pieces, but I don't think it's going to be any big contract, any cornerstone contract that they'll add from outside the organization.
Yeah, but I mean, even think about the bargain bin that we shop out of. We get Clowney out of the bargain bin. We get Van Noy out of the bargain bin. We get very good, productive players out of that bargain bin. We want to be able to keep doing that. Like the people that are saying, "Oh, the cap isn't real. The cap doesn't matter. Draft picks don't matter. All of, they're just lottery tickets." All of that. I joke that it's almost kind of like how my son plays Madden. My son plays Madden with the salary cap off and forced trades on, so he can make any trade that he wants. So so the salary cap doesn't matter. So he loads a roster. He gets Justin Jefferson and Tyreek Hill and, you know, Jamar Chase all on as his wide receivers. It's like, yeah, you want to have fun like that, but that's not the real world. Like the cap is real. Draft picks are invaluable. They are gold. That's how you build a team, and that's how you build a successful team year in and year out.
All right, let's haul it back in. We'll talk some defense here now because that's what you're here to hear. I thought this was a game where obviously the results are not what the Ravens would like, and they'll look at this, and I think they got kind of a woodshedding from Burrow in this game in a lot of ways. So Humphrey bailed him out with the interception, but they really got taken down the field, and I didn't have any hope at all. I don't know about you, that they'd be able to stop the Bengals when they got the ball back with the score tied. I thought the chance of them getting a stop there was ridiculous. Then I did remember that the Bengals had to play 3-down football. So they couldn't mm-hmm. they couldn't play 4-down football with the game tied. But I didn't have any hope that was going to work out. And then Justin Madubuike, you know, came out of the phone booth with a fantastic sack. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the way the Bengals were just marching down the field was just incredibly demoralizing. And I totally get. But and I mean, the Marlin play was that was the play that just turned everything and turned the fortunes away, you know, in favor of us against the Bengals. I mean, we got pretty much a kitchen sink game from the Bengals, who, you know, still a talented team, but underachieving. And we knew this was going to be a very tight game, a very hard-fought game. It's a division rivalry game. And that play just changed everything. Even if he made a great play and just knocked that ball down, Bengals are still in field goal range. They probably kick a field goal if we get a stop. And, you know, now we have to go score a touchdown instead of getting a tie. And especially when they missed that Mark Andrews face mask, I mean – it's a fourth down when we, you know, when we kick that field goal, and now we have to convert a fourth down rather than, you know, yeah. out being for, you know, inside their red zone and making it that much harder and needing to score a touchdown. So
were you in favor of going for it anyway at that point? Cause I'll tell you, I was, I didn't think the 56 yard field goal from Tucker was a worthwhile risk. I thought time management perspective, it was better to go for the win there than the tie.
I see your argument. I was fine with them going for it. You have kicking. The greatest. Yes. Kicking the ball. Yes. Mm-hmm. I was fine for them kicking it because you have to have your faith in Tucker. You know, he can make big kicks. Yes. He's been in that slump, but he's the GOAT for a reason. You know, go ahead and don't take too much of a risk there, but yes, That Madubuike sack was absolutely huge right there, and coming back, because it was tough how good Burrow was in the second quarter on through the game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, let's see, what do we want to talk about here? Lots of stuff to go to in terms of how the Ravens dealt with Joe Burrow in this game. I thought they actually did get a good amount of pressure on him. I'm going to go over that a little bit later with the pass rush stuff. What happened was, which was really, this is, it's more difficult because I think more of it's on the secondary and more of it's on the back seven than on the front four, is that Burrow way outpassed his opportunity set. And when I say that, he was 140 yards better than kind of an arbitrary standard that I use. Should have thrown for about 232 yards, given his set of each of ATS pressure and BOQ opportunities. And he actually threw for, you know, what, 371, I think it was net. And, you know, I think what that means to me is that Burrow is basically, the Ravens are not getting the production they need out of the back end for the quality of pressure they delivered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think part of it was the Ravens were playing decent defense or in the early downs. Mm-hmm. They were excellent against the run pretty much the whole game. And that put them in a lot of third down situations. The Bengals, they just executed those third downs just impeccably. And, you know, I was looking at the stats, like, between that, their 2-minute drill up until Marlin's interception. Burrow was 21 of 23 for 314 and four touchdowns. So in about two quarters, two and a half quarters, he was on an absolute heater. And, but part of that was that they were forcing the third downs. They just couldn't make that play to get off the field. Or the Bengals didn't make that mistake. Sometimes Burrow could be just a little bit off on a pass, or a receiver can drop the ball, or, you know, a defensive lineman can get a hand up and tip a pass, something like that. None of those things were happening in those two and a half quarters. And it made it look a lot worse. And it was bad. Don't get me wrong. It was really bad, but you want to have a team, you know, in a lot of third down situations. And they did. And, you know, they were just able to convert a whole bunch of them. And, you know, and in some respects, you almost wish that if they scored a touchdown, just hit a 50-yard bomb and score a touchdown rather than
like they did on the 70-yard screen pass.
Yeah, like the 72-yard spring pass, something like that. You want that because you just don't want your defense on for 10-play drive after 10-play drive. But, you know, like it was bad, but it wasn't as bad as you would think it is, because it's hard to replicate that kind of success on third down over and over and over again.
Now, you just brought up an interesting point, and I hadn't really thought about it yet, but I know this has been true in other games where the Ravens have been defending the lead like this. So Cincinnati had a big lead. Of course, the Ravens had a long drive. Actually, the Ravens didn't have a long drive. They probably had a five or six play drive to score. Then they threw the 70-yard screen pass. Then the Ravens are on the field again for a while, going down to score again. Do you think that screen pass and the fact that it went the distance actually changed the momentum in the game when taken as a whole with the sandwich of drives around it, the bread around it, in terms of consecutive plays that defense had to be on the field?
Sure. I mean, if you even almost think about the Ravens game against Dallas, when
very similar when
Flowers missed the onside kick, they were on the field for I think basically 24 out of 25 consecutive plays, something
24 to 27.
Like
absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, your defense does need to get a chance to rest. And I mean, especially when you're out there chasing Lamar Jackson around. I mean, Hubbard and Hendrickson, I'm surprised they weren't getting oxygen masks every three plays, just getting thrown down by him and chasing them all around the backfield like the way they did. But it's a tough, yeah.
One other thing about the coaching from this game, and this is something Harbaugh would not have done this, you know, basically sat back with a 56-yard field goal being the possibility. Okay. Run the ball three straight times for 3 yards total, made it a 53-yard field goal. After your quarterback has had the kind of day that he had, just unbelievable. And Bengals fans are rightly livid about that situation. You know, they got a huge break that basically gave them a chance to win the game when the Ravens, it didn't look like the Ravens could be stopped either. If I remember correctly, the Bengals had the one play 70-yard drive. Then they had a 3-play drive where Matabike had his sack to basically get them off the field at the end of regulation. Then they had another 3-play drive that was the overtime 3-and-out with 3 yards rushing fiasco. Mm-hmm. They were only on the field for 7 plays in the last, you know, very significant amount of time in that game. It might have been close to, you know, 12 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. It's just not enough. And then you even if you maybe expected to kick the field goal and thought you were in field goal range, really believe in your kicker, you know, it's still worth trying to get a first down or run 7 or 8 consecutive plays, possibly, just to keep the other team off the field in case you do miss it. The other thing that I thought was, you know, if you have that much confidence in kicking from that distance, kick on third down. Do what the Ravens did. The Ravens took all risk of a bad hold or bad snap out of the field goal that Tucker ended up kicking to win the game by just doing it on first down.
Right. Yeah, I thought Zach Taylor was, just absolutely terrible at the end of the game. I realized that we might be seeing a kind of a shift at how good these kickers are across the league. Maybe the 50-yard field goal has become the new 40-yard field goal, where all of these kickers can make a 50-yard field goal with these. I don't think we're completely there yet, but I mean, if you look around the league, boy, you got a lot of good kickers that can make 50-yard field goals with these. But to only run the ball three straight times when you couldn't run all day, you couldn't run. It's not like you could even get 3 or 4 yards per run. To run it three times, the way Burrow was just on fire like that, that was a total gift.
It was a total gift. And what's more is, not only did they run it three times, but they put personnel on the field, which allowed the Ravens to play their base defense on those three snaps. The base defense allowed nothing against the run. Against the Bengals, go real quickly to this. They ran the ball 8 times against the Ravens' base defense for 6 yards. Mm-hmm. They had 1 3-yard run. That was a long 3 ones, and the rest were zeros. Mm-hmm. It did not make not even a whit of sense. And I think the Bengals fans are rightly fuming today about that. A lot of people calling for Zach Taylor's head over this. Of course, Kevin Stefanski is already, on a pole of effigy outside of the Browns facility, I'm sure, from a lot of people's minds. And it's incredible. What's going on in the rest of the division and how much better the Ravens situation is. If you can't appreciate right now as a Ravens fan, I don't know what's going to ever make you happy. I seriously have no idea. This is a great spot to be in.
Right. I always think the day after we win a Super Bowl, you hear on the radio how fans want to fire Harbaugh, fire Billick the day after we win a Super Bowl. So there's just some fans that will never be satisfied unless, I guess, we go on a Patriots type dynasty run or something like that. But I mean, yes, like we the Ravens are absolutely in the best situation for the division. I mean, it's no surprise, even when we were 0-2, that Vegas still had us as the favorite to win the division, even though the Steelers were 2-0. And yeah, so it is a great time to be a Ravens fan. The Ravens are absolutely one of the top three teams in the AFC. It's Baltimore, Kansas City, Houston. I'm not 100% sure to put Houston above us, but
right,
sure, they're 4-1 right now, so give them that respect. But
Buffalo, and maybe
I don't know about Buffalo. Buffalo is Josh Allen is holding that team together on his shoulders. I think it's a very average roster after Josh Allen. So
all right.
But Josh Allen is great also. So, that's a team that I don't know can win a Super Bowl, but that's a team that could beat anybody with Josh Allen.
That is the group of teams that I would say are the competitors. And if you're down to that few, and right now the Ravens are the number two favorite in the entire NFL to win the Super Bowl behind only the Chiefs. If you go out on Odds Checker, for example, and look at that, they're about a 70% chance to win the AFC North right now, if you believe the betting public. They're actually like around 69%. I did the imputed it and took out the juice, but they're around 69%. The Steelers about 20. The Bengals, I think, remarkably, still are at 10%, and the Browns at 1%. So the betting public is kind of speaking there. With regard to the Browns, though, I think that's just that number is too high. It's basically a take advantage of the betting public kind of number. Yeah.
Sure. Those fans should give their money to charity rather than bet on the Browns at this point.
All right, let's keep going here because we got to talk some defense here. I did want to ask you, will you take visual memories from this game? And I don't know how other people's memories work. I'm extremely visual in putting together memories of games from the past. So the 2003 Seattle game, I have a whole mess of visual memories from that game. How do you like recall a game like this 15 years from now?
So a few things that I'll always remember. One, the Lamar Jackson fumble pick up and shake off a defender and find Likely in the back of the end zone. That play is right up there with, you know, that's going to be in, you know, one of the top three plays in Lamar Jackson's highlight reel at the end of his career. That play I'll always remember. The Marlin interception, that play right there is a play that's just, it was such a huge shift in, you know, the fortunes of the Ravens. I mean, you don't want to be 2-3, even if you feel fairly confident. But being below 500 this deep into the season puts you at risk for division or even going to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But being able to put the Bengals, who are probably your top competitor at the beginning of the season, at 1-4 and give them very little chance at the division just off of that one play, that's what I'm going to remember most. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I still think back to the 2003 Seattle game. It's been 21 years and I've still got 20 visual memories, I'd say, from that game. The tip ball off Marcus Robinson's fingers that went to Frank Sanders for the 44 yard play, and the 3rd and 15, even though it wasn't one of his 4 touchdowns, the read block punt, the Bulware sack for minus 15, the Dilfer coming into the game in overtime and throwing an incomplete pass, which was a great thing. Right. I think they had, it was Tim Hasselbeck and not Matt Hasselbeck who was reviewing this game in one video I saw, but he didn't even bring up this game. But to me, that game and this game are very closely put. Both overtime games decided by 3 points, similar scores, 44-41, 41-38. Both times, the opposing QB had an incredible record for the day. Matt Hasselbeck was 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, some huge number of yardage, which I don't remember. And the Ravens, of course, had Anthony Wright.
Anthony Wright game, yes, coming out party. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Shift gears a little bit. The Ravens' biggest need as of now for you, where is it? Seeing the offense and the defense play the way they did.
Sure. I would still like to see them get an offensive lineman, probably a guard. I think Rosengarten's played pretty well these last couple of games since he started. So I guess maybe I have a little less worry about tackle, but I would love to see them get a very solid above average guard. And then, I mean, I think defensively the biggest need to me would be safety. Mm-hmm. I think of the corners, I think your corners, I hate to whirl through 4 touchdowns against this, but like your corners were not terrible that game. A lot of those plays were just great players making great plays. I mean, they had tight coverage on Higgins so many times, but his length is just such an advantage. I mean, he's like a center in the post, just grabbing those balls. But I think the weakness kind of has been Marcus Williams just hasn't been that playmaker that he was the first couple of years with us. And I wonder if you could somehow to help Marcus and kind of get Jackson off of the field, you know, more would probably be, I think if we could make a trade, I would like to look for a safety.
Yeah. Okay. I would too. And next year, Jackson and Williams will probably both be gone. I think we'll have to expect that. I don't want to be forced into a situation where Hamilton has to move back to the back end because of that. So it's even a position where a rental is fine, honestly, because I think it's that important. But also having another guy who could come in and be under contract or under control, so you could get. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes. Anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A third year player, maybe, and that means you might have to take a chance on a guy. I mean, I think the problem is that they've got a guy in Jackson who just isn't very good at all, and he's been bad for 4 years. The Ravens took a chance on him; it didn't work out. Cut your bait and move on. The guy they have, the guy they might get might be a third year player that another organization either has a problem with or they can't really get him to do what the Ravens think they can get him to do traits wise, whatever it might be. But there's an opportunity to bring in somebody. And it potentially could be a guy who's got 2 years left on his contract and is making, you know, mid-tier safety money. Who's making $5-6 million a year that the Ravens would have to actually pay. That still could be a good arrangement for them. Given where they are right now, but I think that it's going to be a position they have to address next year anyway. So they may as well try and address it right now. I'd like it to be a young player, but if it's 28-year-old guy, my requirement is got to be able to play free safety. He has to be able to play free safety. Yes. because he's got to be able to replace Marcus Williams if he gets hurt, which is probably the bigger mm-hmm. need, and he's got to be able to play that back end like a free safety does and not like a strong safety does.
Right, exactly. I absolutely do not want to see kind of an in the box safety or somebody that's just kind of more of a run stuffer. I think we definitely need to find a guy that's got some range and can play that single high and or split field safety, cover a lot of ground back there.
All right. Well, let's keep going here. You mentioned the Ravens stopped the run effectively. I don't think there's too much we need to really continue on with that. And the Ravens ran the ball very effectively. And it was interesting because I wasn't even sure they were going to make 100 yards the way the Bengals had them in a hole. And it's not something I look at all the time, but I've kind of thought about it in the third quarter. I'm like, the Ravens aren't going to run again in this game unless it's a Lamar scramble. It's going to be all passes from now on. And they did somehow manage to pile up 175 yards regardless. And it was about 117 of that, I think, was over after halftime. I think they had about 58 yards at the half.
Right, yeah. I mean, the Bengals threw a lot of resources. They were not going to let Derrick Henry beat them on the ground. And they were doing a lot of run blitzes. Played really well against our interior and were able to get kind of stopped Derek before he got going. The only kind of success we had were those little tosses outside, before, and of course you had the big run. And, you know, Lamar was scrambling here and there, and there were a couple of design runs. I mean, you probably remember the one where he kind of shoved Ronnie to out of the way to, you know, on a design run, but they did a good job stopping the run. And when they committed those additional resources, Lamar's got to beat them with their arm, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, I thought the Ravens did a really wonderful job of finding taking what the Bengals defense gave them in the game, whether it was pass or run. And even later in the game, I mean, when the Bengals pretty much had done more to try and stop the pass, they weren't really able to get it done. Part of it was, you know, being on the field for a while and your pass rush not being as effective, but they also were just not all that good at stopping intermediate passes or anything that comes back into zone play. Ravens got lots of free receivers. They got lots of extended receivers open during this game. So I know that they're very broken in terms of the secondary. So it's fair to say, you know, kind of beating on a wounded animal here, but the Ravens did a very good job of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Missed tackles. Nice item for the Ravens in this one because they only missed five tackles the whole game, a 7.5%. Rate, which is really good. The last couple games, the Ravens have not missed a lot of tackles. They did miss a sack. I think it might have been Owe who missed a sack in this game. I'm trying to think of who was in on the quarterback and didn't take him down.
Yeah, it was Owe escaped it. Yeah, he escaped out. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
but
overall, you know, they've been outstanding the last couple of weeks, and a lot of their missed tackles that you'd see on like PFF, which is a very strict missed tackle site. I still would recommend using that over some other sources, but I even in their very strict interpretation of missed tackles, a lot of what they had is tackles, particularly last week against Buffalo, were tackles that contributed to positive plays. So, like I always say, there's missed tackles, the really bad ones. They're in the open field and they cost you a lot of yak. And the ones that are not so bad, and the Ravens didn't have any of those, by the way. The ones that are not so bad, or maybe they cost you a sack and then the quarterback gets a completion, would be another way. But the other ones where you turn the running back, you know, 120 degrees in the backfield kind of thing, those are usually very positive in terms of
impact. Yeah. Yeah. Whenever you, either change the hole that a running back is going to, or dramatically stop and but you don't make the tackle, you still made the play even though you didn't make the tackle. So that's important. I mean, I'm sure there was probably a missed tackle on that Jamar Chase screen pass. That's also a tough play. Jamar Chase, I mean, he runs like a running back. Mm-hmm. He has the power of back at wide receiver, and that's one of the things I'm really very impressed with him about, is he runs with a lot of 4-3 whatever, so he's of a player. But yeah,
we'll have a moment here. Take a look at your private chat, please. Here there's a sound issue that I'm trying to get behind here. Want to talk though, move on and talk about the packages the Ravens used a little bit, because they've moved to the dime in the last couple of weeks, and they've been, you know, it's the Ravens have been winning as they've been in the dime, but the dime hasn't necessarily been all that effective. And I want to talk through that a little bit. They're very effective in base. We went over that base. They kind of had a higher expectation of the run coming, or very effective stopping it. Of course, they did allow one big base play, was the 70-yard screen pass to Chase. But other than that, they were very effective, which is kind of like saying, other than the apocalypse, you know, we're fine kind of thing. They played a fair amount of standard nickel where they were effective. They played some big nickel where they were much less effective. Now, what's the difference between the big nickel and standard nickel? Well, Hamilton is up in that slot cornerback in the big nickel. And that means somebody has to come in on the back end, and that's Eddie Jackson in the big nickel. So I think I'm not, by the way, mapping what are still a very limited set of data points from this game to saying that Eddie Jackson has really not done the job for the Ravens. I just haven't seen him make a lot of plays, and we've seen him bust coverages already a couple times. That's enough, because I didn't really have a lot of confidence in him coming into the year. That he was a guy who hadn't played well in the last 4 years in total, and is a guy, you know, he's on watch already to start. He's already on probation when he started the season effectively, from my point of view.
Yeah, sure. I mean, especially when you have players kind of like Ardarius Washington that are playing a lot better in the snaps that they're getting. Like Ardarius may not be necessarily the full back end player that Eddie Jackson kind of is, but I do think as the season goes on, we might see kind of a shift on who's playing more and more at the end of the season. I mean, you know, Eddie Jackson's in the league 10 years. I think he deserves a little bit of grace, but it's also, he's been in the league 10 years. So he's on the back nine of his career, and we want to, you know, you really have to, you know, show and prove that you're still going to be effective at the end of the season. And, you know, it's going to be one of those things that I think you're going to, they will probably make a change at some point during the season.
Yeah, I agree. We actually, in this game, we saw Ardarius on the back end for a handful of plays. It might've been two or three, but it was just enough to let you know that they're thinking about it. So we'll see how that plays out. They had various players missed time in this game, a snap or two here or there, which provided some opportunity for it too. So, you know, some of it is he's the emergency player and is a guy who could be there. Other than that, I mean, the dime is also a package where Jackson is in there. Jackson's play in the dime is important, but the dime hasn't really posted great stats so far. Now, some of it is game script related. They've been having to be in there playing very soft at the end of games where the Ravens have led and given up a lot of passes in front of the defense. Okay, no problem on that kind of stuff. But there have been some busted coverages too. And the 52, that Allen had running to the sideline, which is amazingly similar, by the way, to the Lamar Jackson play, except he didn't have the fumble, was another play where Jackson wasn't in the right place. And it very frustrating to see these kind of things continuing. But it is, I think, part of the reason we haven't seen exactly what we might expect from the packages, and the dime in particular, is that it's there's some personnel issues with who's on the field.
Right, sure. And I mean, I think there are communication issues going on out there. No matter what the what package they're in. I mean, I think about the second touchdown to Higgins, where Higgins went in motion and a cornerback didn't go with him, and it was him and Eddie Jackson one on one, and it's like that should never happen.
Yeah. And then that was one where Marlon Humphrey actually blitzed off that slot. So if he had even moved, by the way, I've seen that before. There was the Ravens game a few years ago where Hogan, of all people, you know, the wide receiver for the Patriots, beat. They wanted to blame it on Matt Elam because he ended up being the guy who was the safety on that side of the field. But it was actually Lardarius Webb did not switch sides of the field. I don't think there's ever a good reason not to have your safety follow the corner that they're lined up. Not to follow the wide receiver opposite where you're going. I don't think there's a good reason for it. If you're playing zone, you can drop the zone differently. If you're set the blitz, you can call off the blitz. I mean, there's a literally legitimate options in both cases. I don't think it's ever a good idea to have a corner let a guy go, because it basically gives the quarterback a lot of information he can work with when you don't travel with that slot receiver.
Right, exactly. And I mean, it frustrated the heck out of me, because that was after we got the gift of the delay of game that moved him back from the one to the six.
Yep.
And you just gave Joe Burrow just as easy a touchdown as he's good. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a well-designed delay of game, by the way. That did involve the Ravens coaches, if you're not aware. Yep. But you explain it, Brandon. Go ahead.
Sure. When the offense substitutes a player, brings, you know, a different package or whatever, the defense has the opportunity to substitute also. Mm-hmm. So the Bengals substituted, and they substituted a little late. I think maybe 25 seconds when they substituted. So the Ravens took their time in substituting and bringing in their players, which forced the referees to stop play when the Bengals were ready to run. The Ravens were still bringing their players on the field and got the delay of game penalty. So
the officials are standing over the football. Yeah. Sometimes the game clock gets stopped during that, but the play clock doesn't get stopped. And oftentimes you'll see the quarterback, and this is something to look for. And I think most people know what this means now. A palm raised,
raised
and pushing
to the sky.
Upwards.
Yeah, means to reset the play clock. Yeah,
reset the play clock. Damn it, you know. And quarterbacks do it all the time. Peyton Manning used to call for it pretty much every play. I mean, just would be asking for the play clock to be reset. But anyway, sometimes they'll grant it and sometimes they won't. And we've seen them grant it oddly at times this year, but they didn't do it this time. I think you always have a potential benefit when you substitute slowly. So if you're not appreciating, again, that part of how well this team is coached, you can do so now. You have my permission.
Yes, yes. I would say to those Harbaugh haters, you have to give him credit when he does smart things like that. Those are... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on and talk a little bit about the pass rush, because it was an interesting game of pass defense. Obviously, it didn't work out the way the Ravens want, but they actually got pretty good pressure in this game. They did a good job of getting into the cone. The problem was that Burrow was not really bothered by having people in the cone. He didn't mind taking short steps, shortening up, you know, his throwing motion and whatnot. He didn't have any trouble getting the ball over the line, which is something Burrow's had trouble with in the past occasionally. I guess it's something I more associate with Dalton, his predecessor, than with Burrow directly. But hands up are supposed to bother any quarterback. And we just didn't have a, you know, I don't think we had a single deflected pass in this game. Am I wrong about that? Did we get one at some point?
I don't remember one. I didn't see one. Not at the line, obviously.
Right, at the line.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I didn't. I don't remember seeing one. Yeah.
So I want to divide this up and tell people how I look at the opportunity set. And I've done this in the past, but I it's not something I do every week or anything. Yeah, Burrow threw the ball 42 times in this game. Okay. So the big thing about Joe Burrow is, you're always going to have a certain percentage of his passes and a pretty high percentage that are out quickly, and there's nothing you can do about getting pressure to him. So if you're complaining about the pass rush, the quarterback has something to do with it. He can prevent you from getting a rush if he gets rid of that ball quickly. So what I want to see is, on the balls where he doesn't get it out quickly, I want to see a very good ratio of pressure to ATS opportunities. And the Ravens got that in this game. They got 16 pressures and allowed only 8 ample time and space opportunities. The ample time and space opportunities across the league are where you typically get killed, particularly by pocket quarterbacks, because their full range of options and full timing of the routes they have is available. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the 16-8 ratio is terrific. Normally, I'd say 1.5-1 is pretty good pressures to ATS. In fact, 1.5-1 is quite good. 1-1 is not what you want. But they got, you know, 16-8. But here's the problem, though. The 8 ATS plays, he only threw for 6.9 yards per play anyway. And normally I would expect 8.5 might be normal. But there were so few in number that it didn't matter that was his bad, you know,
right.
Opportunity set, or he was bad at it. When the ball was out quickly, 18 plays, that's 43% of the total, threw for 183 yards, 10.2 per play. Now, the 70-yard screen pass is in that group. Okay, and most screen passes would be in a BOQ group. But even if you took that out, it's still better than average. It'd be about 7.0, roughly, maybe slightly less than that in terms of ball out quick. Still almost a yard better than what I would expect.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead if you got.
Okay. Yeah. I'm curious to hear about how we did under pressure, because it seemed like when we did get pressure that he was still making those throws, still making great plays. It's hard to say. Like Burrow, he was just such in a zone for that game. Like it's hard to really fault or do any. Sometimes you just chalk it up to a great player just having a great game, and he And like you could see during the game, Orr was trying. He was trying different things. He was trying man zone. He sent some blitzes. He did a lot of simulated pressures, and it did, for that two quarters, it just seemed like none of it worked. It was working in the beginning. In the beginning of the game, and that probably most of the first half, a lot of that stuff was working. But when Burrow locked in, and just none of that worked. And, you know, their great receivers were just playing better than our corners. And Joe Burrow was just locked in and just could get it to them over and over again with no problems. And, you know, incredibly efficient, but it, like, I would say it's almost, he was so efficient that I would expect in the next game or, you know, most games, you're going to see a regression back kind of towards the mean on everything there.
Oh, for him, I would agree. This is an outlier game. This is very much like Lamar at Miami in 2019, for example, and just how remarkable it was. Not quite that good, but it was very good. You mentioned the pressure though. 16 plays with pressure. He still threw for 78 yards. That's 5.2 yards per play. That doesn't seem to work out to 5.2. which I will look at and correct later. But there were three sacks and one turnover in that group. So he's, even though, and this is net yards that I'm using there, at 5.2 yards per play, that's still 150% of what you'd expect. Maybe 3.5 yards might be average under pressure. So it doesn't seem like a lot of yards per throw, but it's great for your worst opportunities. Right. So that was what was really, special about that. In total, he outperformed that opportunity set, I think I mentioned earlier, by 140 yards. If I looked at the 2023 Ravens and what they gave up for this opportunity set, instead of using what I use arbitrarily to judge Jackson, for example, relative to his opportunity set, if I put in the 2023 Ravens averages for those three conditions, it would have been 200. It would have been only 200 yards, and he would have outdone it by 171 for the game. So. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not fair to judge our current defense based on the 2023 defense, but it's also the last defense we had, damn it. It's supposed to be, an improved back end.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Now, we want to talk a little bit about numbers. They did not really try numbers at all versus Burrow. 5 times in 42 attempts, which is only 12%, did they rush 5 plus against him.
Right.
Which... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. You don't really blitz Burrow. Burrow's very good against the blitz. I know I saw several times where they did a lot of simulated rushes where they were bringing Kyle or they bring in Roquan and dropping somebody back. So they were still rushing four, but you didn't know which four were coming. They did that a lot, and they had some positives and negatives. When Burrow was hot, he was beating that. Kyle got a sack. They did it on Matabike's sack. I'm pretty sure they had a simulated blitz on that one too. But obviously Matabike got that on a stunt. And anyway,
it was a stunt. Yeah,
yeah. Matabike got it. I know he got it on a stunt, but I don't think the front four were the four that rushed. I think that was a simulated. That might have been a simulated blitz also.
It was one dropping, not two. So I wouldn't classify it that way. But Roquan Smith did drop from the line of scrimmage to do it. Okay. But I only count it if it's two plus as being a simulated pressure. There's too much of the one. And it's also it's too frequently the responsibility of the Sam linebacker, for example, to drop and cover the tight end to take that out of the group. So it's just the way I decided to do it when I started tracking this. Yeah. Some other things about deception that went into this, and you mentioned a couple of the categories, but the off-ball blitzes, they had 5 in the first half, and then they completely shut them down. And it began, they didn't have any blitzes beginning with the drive where they moved right down the field at the end of the second quarter to score at the end of the half. They didn't have any blitzes from that point forward. To that point, they'd had 5 blitzes across 4 plays. Those 4 plays went for 6 total yards. 1.5 yards per play. So, you know, in a day where you had no success holding down Burrow's production by really any means, why not a few more trials with something that did work? I said, well, I'm trying to figure out why they shut it down completely at that point. And it's not like they didn't have cornerbacks rushing the quarterback. They did have some of that. They just all declared early and they were, you know, moving inside and showing themselves, or they were linebackers that came up to the line of scrimmage and blitzed from there. A lot of that in simulated pressure looks where they dropped other players. It's not like they didn't like come with odd combinations of players, but they didn't disguise the blitz until the snap and rush the quarterback. Is there maybe a release time component to that you could see?
I'm not sure. I'm almost kind of wondering, is somebody in Zach Orr's ear saying, hey, you know, this has been working the last three plays. Let's try it more. I don't know, a quality control coach, mm-hmm. a D backs coach, or, you know, anybody who's, you know, who's in that conversation. Yeah, like so few things were working, and it might also been just, you know, a small sample size, and maybe it's something that they see on the back end, like, oh, somebody might have been running free, but Burrow just missed them, or something like that, or, you know, a little confusion, something like that is also possible. Yeah,
but I'm okay. Not sure. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a very good point. Of course, it's not all about what results actually occurred. It's about other stuff too. All right. What else we want to get to here? Yeah, they did do a lot of simulated pressure, as you mentioned, and they had how many? They had 6 simulated pressures where 2+ dropped. They're very effective in that with only 4.3 yards per play. I kind of felt like whenever they were asking Roquan, particularly alone, to drop the coverage, I think you significantly disadvantage him on those plays. And there was one on, I think it was on the touchdown pass that went to, now I'm forgetting.
Higgins on the left side. Higgins,
I was going to say, yeah, you're right. Cause he came across a couple zones as he did that. Yeah, didn't he?
Marlon was in slot coverage. He was on the right side. Higgins was on the left side of the offense, and he basically kind of ran a slant, and somebody ran an inside route to the left of Roquan that I think had made Roquan hesitate just enough to open it up for Higgins on that slant. Yeah.
And the other guy they had dropping on that play, I want to say it was one of the linemen, like Matabike or Washington, maybe dropping to level 2. Yeah, the play, it is actually both of them. On the 3rd and 5 play, the drive that ended the first drive of the third quarter, sorry, that ended with that 5-yard touchdown after the false start, they had a 4-3 blitz, which means they had 4 men rushing, showed 7 at the line of scrimmage, and they had 3 of them drop. And they were Hamilton, which makes perfect sense. That's fine. Matabike and Broderick Washington. Oh, so that's wow. That, not a lot of coverage assets.
No. Yeah. Your hope is when you see 96 dropping back, you just make Burrow hesitate just a second for the that blitz to get home. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, you know, I think there's some value that whenever you have a lineman who drops to cover, that their immediate rule is just to try and read the eyes of Burrow and move laterally in the direction they think would make sense. It's almost like what a soccer goal has to do. To stop a penalty kick.
I was about to say, you pick a side. Don't hesitate. Yeah.
You're not going to be much as a coverage asset anyway. And you just hope you take away his read on that play somehow.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Matabike, we'll talk about him a bit when we talk about the individual players, but what a day he had with contributions to 8 pressure events. He was the one guy that was consistently getting pressure. There's some wonderful setup in there, by the way. They've now paired up, basically, if you look at, you know, look at the score sheet that we keep, it's Jones and Matabike are in the game almost all the time together. And it's a great, great deal for Matabike to have that, because teams double Jones, who is an absolute freak of nature in there. Yeah. And Matabike is a ball of muscle who could beat anybody one-on-one. And it's just, right. It's really turned out to be a good deal for both of them. Even though Matabike's sack total has not been particularly impressive so far, boy, is he going to be great this year.
Yeah. I thought he had the best game of his season easily this year. He was in the backfield all the time. I mean, and he was running over their guards and center constantly hit. Both him and Jones were just creating piles of just massive human beings, you know, which is effective if you want to collapse that pocket and have make it hard for Joe Burrow to step up. It's hard to step up when you got your 300-pound lineman right in your lap like that. So it's all part of it. Yeah, he had a heck of a game. Best game of the season. And I mean, I hate to ruin it. I don't know if he's getting a reputation with these roughing the pass calls, but raffling the passer calls. But that hit on the long touchdown, I mean, that was a heck of a hit and looked totally clean. And he still managed to get a flag on that. I don't know if he's getting a reputation and now the refs are looking for that or going to judge him harder. But I mean, he's getting a rough calls here.
Well, Owe had his fine removed from week one. And, you know, I think, you know, he posted on Twitter and had, you know, considered it as an exoneration, which it really is from a certain sense. The problem is if the officials are still going to call it that way, if there's not going to be communication, the officials say, stop calling these bullshit roughing the passer penalties. If that doesn't happen, then, you know, officials are going to call it how they feel like calling it. And sure. And that a lot of times means that these really marginal roughing the passer calls. By the way, no problem. If somebody, you know, slaps the quarterback upside of the head, which is where, you know, one of the big reasons why you get a roughing the passer penalty, that's roughing the passer. If they go helmet to helmet, that's roughing the passer. If they spear the quarterback, lead with a crown, that's roughing the passer. If they come down on the quarterback, that's where the really marginal ones happen. And they have to make all these judgments in real time about, you know, did he really land on him with all his weight? Did he not? And, you know, one thing to try and do is just to send those calls all to New York or something.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that they don't want to break up the game to do that, but they're so important and so impactful. I don't want these over-officious jerks, you know, ruining the game of football.
Marv
for us.
Levy. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. Marv Levy, one of the great lines. Yeah. But yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think for everybody, it's about getting the calls right. And there's so many instances. I mean, even sometimes it's spotting the ball. Like, that's an easy replay that a replay official can say, hey, move that ball up.
Right.
6 inches, move that ball back a yard or, you know, or whatever. And sometimes they do it and then sometimes they don't. And it's like, why, where is the picking and choosing? Just have some uniformity, I guess.
Yeah. Right. Did you understand why they didn't catch the Andrews face mask on by replay assistant? Do they have to ask the replay assistant for the replay assistant to be involved, or is he allowed to just communicate, hey, that was a face mask, Mark Andrews, you know, was clearly grabbed. If you guys missed it, that's okay, but throw the flag.
I don't think replays review penalties, so they can't review Mark Andrews getting his face mask. Like,
certain, I think penalties, they only because they will do intentional grounding, I think.
Do they do it? I don't know if they do intentional grounding. Maybe they do. Because I think generally, you know, you see the referees huddle and say, was a receiver in the area? Was he in the tackle box? And they're conferencing and then they'll throw the flag late, you know, or whatever. But yeah, I do know they do not review, you know, personal fouls like the face mask. I think they had that one season where they would review or the pass interference.
They got rid of that.
But they got rid of that. So yeah, I don't think they review many penalties. I think the one that they do review though is 12 men on the field. Okay. That you can challenge that, but yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that might be.
I'm not talking about like the challenge thing. I'm talking about the replay assistant, the extra official who's the replay assist. He has certain duties, and I got to admit, I do not understand it yet. I've got to read up on that again. We got to bring part one to a close here. Brandon, always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Sure. I'm on Twitter at bcroxton99. Love talking Ravens and just football and the NFL in general. So reach me there.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. Had a few new ideas that are really outstanding for guys coming on the show, and they want to talk about something specific they're passionate about. Ideally, you cut it down to a sliver of something that could be done in about 20 minutes, because we are trying to really provide some short content in addition to all the long content you get from us, like this show, like this program. Brandon, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.